Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. Today is Monday, the 27th of September, 2021. I'm Joe Vicnicki, and this is a COVID panel discussion. And we've got lots to talk about. Our last one was about a month ago. Since then, we've seen an increase in cases here in Petersburg. So let's dive right in and get the latest update from our panelists who are joining me online. I'll start off today with the borough's emergency manager, Sandy Dixon. Sandy, are you on?
Yeah, I'm here, Joe.
What's the latest from your desk?
Well, in response to the increased cases in the community, the borough has required masking.
Jump on the radio. I'll check back in with you a little bit. All right, thanks. Bye.
Erica, you might want to mute.
Erica, thanks. If you can mute for a moment. Yep. Go ahead, Sandy.
So all borough buildings are requiring masking for the employees and any patrons coming into the buildings. That's to protect the employees and to the visitors into the facilities. The borough is also encouraging everyone in the community to consider wearing a mask when going into a closed space or in the event that they can't social distance. Obviously, we're encouraging everyone who is willing and able to get a vaccine to do so, and then encouraging the numerous opportunities to test. So the hospital is offering post-travel testing, they're offering asymptomatic testing, and they're offering symptomatic testing. So if you're concerned about whether or not you have COVID, you are a close contact, or you just wanna make sure, take opportunity to participate in that testing.
Okay. All right, let's go next to the Medical Center. Phil Hofstetter, CEO. Phil, what's the latest from your desk?
Yeah, hey, Joe. We've been meeting daily on the incident command with our team and also with school and the Erica and Sandy, trying to get it, and public health, obviously, and trying to get a handle on containing the surge in cases here. So we're definitely seeing an uptick. It's putting pressure obviously on our facility to chase down the contacts. I know Erica's team has been also doing contact tracing to help public health and really trying to get people in for testing. We've stood up asymptomatic testing at our respiratory clinic area, which is right next to public health in that parking lot. And we also have our normal respiratory clinic going as well to try to meet the need of the testing and making sure that everyone can get in that needs to ASAP. We're looking at our supplies, making sure that we have our supplies available for both testing and monoclonal antibodies. Jennifer can probably speak to that a little bit more, but we've provided some treatment, I believe around 14 treatments. Currently, I believe we have, at least on the dashboard, it says 26 active cases, but I believe a few will drop off today. So it's probably be more like 22 later today. We had two positives over the weekend, and then we had two today already. So we'll have more pending on the press release.
Okay. So are you doing a good amount of testing? Are you getting a lot of people in who are getting tested?
Yeah, it's been pretty busy, busy over the weekend, busy fielding calls. I don't actually have the exact numbers for you, but it's certainly enough that we scaled asymptomatic testing to make sure that we can accommodate the need for sort of close contacts that are vaccinated but don't have symptoms. They can go down into asymptomatic clinic area. And we're doing that. We're kind of assessing on a day-by-day basis. We knew there was going to be an uptick since the weekend. So we made that available today, and I believe we got some messages out there on the hours. So keep looking for our posting each day to make sure that the community is aware of when and what time our asymptomatic testings are available.
What's your color status at the medical center, and what does that mean operationally, masking or visitors or anything like that?
Right. For staffing, we went back to universal masking. So that means that even if you're vaccinated, if you're in a common area, then unless you're in a closed office that has the door closed, you have to mask in all areas. We're trying to make sure that we don't have a lot of overlap or congregate area in our break rooms. So we certainly upticked our color code to orange. We are basically, that doesn't mean it doesn't really affect our patient care at this point. In fact, it prompted us to review our color code, diagram and just taking a look at that. So we'll actually have sort of a more up-to-date version of that later in the week. But we did uptick our color, and even though it doesn't affect necessarily our day-to-day patients, it's really reflective on the burden of our staff. So if we are seeing a large uptick or people getting sick in admissions, we might have to monitor and even go to red maybe. But at this point, it's orange.
Okay. You mentioned monoclonal antibodies. Maybe a question for Jennifer Briner. A couple questions about those. What's the supply like here locally? Do you have enough of those treatment? We've heard about shortages of that elsewhere.
Yeah, today we have some supply. I think we have like 14 doses, but we've given, almost that many in the past week. So we are having a difficult time getting more doses. So we are concerned that we will not be able to give them, as freely as we have tried to give them in the past to anybody who would potentially meet the criteria. So what we're seeing in Anchorage and in the rest of the country is definitely impacting us here on that supply.
Can you just briefly talk about this treatment, what it is exactly? I understand it's also under emergency use authorization. Should people be relying on this as a way to get through the worst of COVID?
That's a good question, and I am not an expert on it by any means, but it's a monoclonal antibody treatment. So basically, it helps your body clear the virus faster. It is under emergency use authorization. There are several different brands or types. We have two in stock at Petersburg. And basically, you have to meet certain criteria to qualify to receive it. It may be age or risk factors. It's only to be given in people who are mildly to maybe moderately symptomatic. So it is not a cure, but it's meant for high-risk people to prevent them from getting seriously ill. The answer is no, this is not what people should count on to get them through COVID, because it is less likely probably to be effective than if you had been fully vaccinated. So we really want to encourage people who haven't been vaccinated to be vaccinated. It's much more effective than waiting until you already have COVID and then you're hoping that this treatment, will help you from getting as sick as you may have gotten. So it's a tool that we have, we use, we're very thankful for it, but we would rather prevent it than try to, prevent symptoms from getting worse.
And any idea of the cost to a patient for that treatment? Is it covered by insurance, or if it's not, what's the cost?
The drug itself is free, but there is a cost associated with coming into the hospital, having an IV started, doing cardiac monitoring, and that service. There is like the administration observation piece of it that does have a cost, but the drug itself is no charge at this point.
Okay. Is that because it's funded by emergency money or?
Yes, it's comes through the state, or directly from the manufacturer, but it's covered, just like the vaccines are no cost to anybody as well.
Okay. For the vaccines, who's getting that third shot or booster shot right now? Are healthcare workers getting any of that?
So right now, if people their immune systems are compromised, they are eligible for a third dose of Moderna. And that third dose is different than the booster. So it is meant to bring people who have an immune system that doesn't work well up to the same or about the same immunity as, like, you or I with, somebody who's vaccinated with two shots. The boosters now have been approved for Pfizer. Third shots, if you had a Pfizer, your second shot of Pfizer at least 6 months ago and are in an age category or a risk category, that is, you're eligible for that. You know, some of those earliest people are like our, you know, long-term care residents. And so we're just starting to roll out the Pfizer boosters. And we will be contacting people who have had a Pfizer boost, who have had their Pfizer vaccines here. And we will reach out to you to see if you're interested in a booster. We haven't given them to healthcare workers yet. Healthcare workers at this point are in the may get it, but we really want to focus on the people who should get it, which means our people who are 65 and older or younger with severe or comorbidities that would increase their risk of having severe COVID.
Okay, so beyond healthcare workers, no other frontline or first responders or anyone at this point?
There's some vague things like people, I think it's called people who are at more risk of transmission due to their job. So it's a little bit vague and open, you know, and those are, again, all those people, if they're otherwise low risk, are a little bit down the prioritization pole just because, you know, they're not high risk for another reason, but yes, it would be open to them. The bulk of our community, you know, the very first people got Pfizer because that was what was out. The bulk of our community got probably Moderna until the people who had been more recently vaccinated have seen probably a little bit more Pfizer. So probably, the biggest portion of our community who will need a booster at some point will be Moderna people, and that's not approved yet.
Okay. And are you still giving any first or second shots at this point?
Absolutely. Between the public health department and PMC, we are still giving first and second, and we just, I mean, those are top priority because we need to protect the people who have no protection. And so let us know if you need any vaccines. Today we have all three vaccines, and we anticipate stocking all three for the foreseeable future.
And by that, I mean, are you still getting interest from people still getting their first and their second?
They're trickling in. And actually over the weekend, we got, a good handful of people, and public health is continuing to also immunize. And she is, I don't know if we're getting a dozen people a week, maybe, between first and second doses. So it's slow progress, but it's definitely still progress.
Okay, well, let's go next to Erin Michael, public health nurse, who I know you have a vaccine clinic coming up tomorrow. Erin?
Yes, we're going to be doing for first dose, second dose, and for those that are Pfizer and 6 months out or more and meet those qualifications that Jennifer just mentioned, they can give us a call if they're not sure, and we can go over that information and make sure that they meet those qualifications for the booster or for the immune compromised that are needing that extra dose. So we'll be doing that tomorrow. I think it's 9 to 2 or 3. I can't remember what email I sent you. But we'll be doing that most of tomorrow.
It looks like 3 o'clock is what, from what you sent us, close over the noon hour.
Yes.
And the difference there too is for people who may qualify to get that booster dose to call you. So.
Yeah, just because we want to make sure that they are meeting those qualifications and so that we can give it to them, because there are some qualifiers there.
Can you shed any light on the latest outbreak here in Petersburg, number of cases, what you're seeing in the community, where these cases are they in vaccinated, unvaccinated, or anything like that?
Well, right now we have 23 cases, and some of those are going to drop off after today, most likely, assuming that they are considered recovered enough that they're no longer infectious. As far as whether or not they're vaccinated or unvaccinated, the majority of them are unvaccinated, but there are a few that are vaccinated, which kind of mirrors what we're seeing across the United States, where a small percentage of people that are vaccinated are still catching it. Usually those people have mild to no symptoms. but it can still happen. So that's why we're encouraging people, if you do have any symptoms, or if you have attended group settings, large group settings, or if you've been named as a close contact, even if you are vaccinated, we encourage you to get tested as appropriate. We are seeing that going on.
What's the status on contact tracing by the state of Alaska with so many cases being reported every day here in Alaska?
You know, they brought on quite a few teams to help out, not just public health nurses, but the UAA, who has been a partner for almost the entire time that COVID's been going on. And then they brought back on Rose International, which they're also an out-of-state contractor that helps out. So they're trying to get to people as soon as they can. I can say locally, you know, I'm seeing that there's been attempts, and most people are answering the calls, but there have been some people that, you know, have not returned our calls or have declined to do an interview. So I think that people are getting reached within several days of their positive case, which is good, because there are some places that it's, you know, you're looking at much longer times before people are getting reached. So we really appreciate that people are answering the phone calls when they're getting those. But it's really important that if anybody does come back positive, that they start thinking about who they've been around and getting a hold of those people, because that's going to be the quickest way to get this infection under control, is to have the positive people reach out to who they were around 2 days before they were symptomatic, or if they never had symptoms and they just came back positive because they were testing, because they were close contact, or because they traveled or whatnot. Then if they never had symptoms 2 days prior to their test date, positive test date, and just reaching out to their close contacts and saying, hey, you know, I've come back positive and you should, you know, call the COVID hotline and see about getting testing and hunker down until you get those test results.
Okay. And I know the cases here in Petersburg are relatively recent as far as testing what strain or variant they might be. Is it just assumed that these are all Delta variant with the numbers the way they are elsewhere in Alaska?
It's pretty much, when I keep seeing the reports coming weekly, they keep saying that it's almost exclusively the Delta variant, and that's across the state. They're not saying specifically for locations, but it's really high, like in the 99% have been Delta that they have been monitoring on. So it's safe to assume that we're probably the ones, cases we're seeing here are that.
Okay. And then I know it's probably changing daily. How about hospital bed capacity elsewhere outside of Petersburg? What's that look like? Do you know anything about that?
I think Phil probably has a better pulse on that, because he's part of ASHNA, which they keep track of that. I am unfortunately so focused on giving shots or doing interviews that I haven't been able to see what's been going on with the other hospitals.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to touch on, Erin?
I know that everybody's fatigued by this, and just to really take this seriously, just do all the things we're supposed to be doing, the really simple things. Hand washing, wearing a mask. Please stay home if you're sick. Even if you're like, oh, I always have allergies or I always have a headache, it's not a bad idea to go ahead and get tested, because, you know, allergy symptoms and headaches also can be COVID, and you can't really differentiate between the two. So if you're having those, go ahead and just get tested. It's free. The hospital's offering it and making it very easy to do. And so just please get tested when in doubt, and stay home until you get those results. And please answer your phone when we call so that we can get those interviews done, and give you some valuable information about what you need to do next.
And do you have any go ahead.
I'd like to add on to what Erin said. And even when you have symptoms and a negative test, you still need to stay home, because you know, you may have been tested just before your viral load got high enough to catch COVID or something, but just because you have a negative test does not mean you should return to work. You really need to stay home when you have any symptoms.
Okay. From the medical professionals, what do you recommend to the community for local events, gatherings, indoors or outdoors, masking, or anything like that? Phil, can you handle that one?
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, I mean, at this point, if you're indoors, I encourage you to mask. I mean, I do wish we had the IC up because we would want to address activities. I think that to be safe at this point, looking at the number of cases, how transmissible adult Delta variant is, you want to be really careful about any kind of gathering at this point, especially indoors. Obviously, that messaging hasn't changed. And if just like Jennifer had mentioned, if you're having any symptoms at all, vaccinated or unvaccinated, get tested. Sooner you can get tested, the sooner you could be eligible for that treatment. If you wait too long, there is a timeline on that. So, I mean, at this point, I would lay low. If I were in charge of activities, that would be my recommendation. And if you are, whether you're vaccinated or unvaccinated inside, if you're going inside for anything, a public area, certainly encourage masking and appropriate masking, meaning over the nose, and then hygiene as well.
And then to circle back around to that hospital bed capacity question, Phil, do you know anything about the latest of what it looks like statewide?
Yeah, I took a look at it this morning. Still pretty dire. The number of hospitalizations keeps going up. I believe it's 215 right now. I'm looking at the dashboard. You still at red as far as ICU bed capacity at 106. I mean, these are pretty much the highest. Every day seems like it's the highest we've ever seen. So definitely not plateauing and not even coming down. So those are really concerning. I know colleagues across the state are just really struggling, getting hammered, having these cases come in the ER and starting to treat really sick people and ICU and death. I mean, you're really adding to the burnout in that area. So I know that the state has contracted with nursing and some healthcare workers coming in an emergency status. They should be landing this week and applying to some of those areas for some relief. That's pretty dire, when you think about it. So keeping a lid on the cases here locally is paramount. There's no reason we can't do it. We have the testing, we have the vaccines, we can mask. These are all, we know a lot about the virus now. We know how to prevent it as much as possible. So those are my recommendations.
At this point, you don't expect any of those outside healthcare workers here in Petersburg?
I did contact the state in the event of, we're doing okay right now. And I'd rather see other hospitals that are dealing with active severe illness and circumstances that are much worse than what we have here.
Okay. Let's go next to the school district and Superintendent Erica Klute-Painter. Hi, Erica.
Hi, Joe. Sorry for the interruption there earlier.
No problem.
Lots of phone calls and things here.
What's your status?
So maybe I could just reiterate, piggyback off of some of the things that the medical professionals are talking about here this morning. Super, super important. Can't say it enough. Please do not send your kids to school if they are showing any symptoms. We are doing the best we can within our walls for the 6 hours a day that we have people here. But we are definitely seeing an uptick even just today with all the testing that we're doing here at school with our activity testing and then our new option of offering molecular Q testing, which is a little more sensitive test. We've actually picked up a couple today from over the weekend, and a couple of them were symptomatic. So we really, really, really want to encourage people not to send their kids to school if they are sick, and then to please participate in the testing that's available, through PMC. As Phil alluded to, we have been handed the task this year because of the extremely high numbers in the state that all school districts in the state of Alaska are now part of the contact tracing process more than we ever were last year. Mostly last year, we just tried to help identify people that we considered might fall into that category, but now we're actually helping to give out information and even helping to try to figure out some of the dates for returning. Confirming those, of course, with public health along the way. Public health still works with the actual positive cases, but they're just swamped. So that was a directive that was given to us through DHSS and through the Department of Education. So we really are spending a lot of time in our schools on testing and close contact notification, and then just tracking all of that. So it's become quite a large part of our job. We are still, you know, of course, committed to it because we want to figure out the cases so that we can help people isolate and be out of school as quickly as possible so we don't have cases in the school. But it is definitely impacting us. Actions outside of school clearly have an impact on us as we have a limited amount of time with our kids and our staff here. So everything that everybody can do outside of school as well just helps us here and keeps us going, keeps our kids in person as much as possible. We really do not want to move to that remote option. That is not ideal for anyone. We are still really trying to keep these doors open, keep things as safe as possible, and keep things moving forward with activities and other options for our kids. But I will say we are definitely feeling the pressure of what's happening in the community right now. And today is no exception on that. And just wanting to keep our staff healthy as well. We can't keep things moving forward if we don't have them in place either. So that is kind of the status today. We're kind of in public health mode, I guess, today, unfortunately, is mostly what we're doing today. So.
Okay. Still red status with universal masking, I believe.
Yes, we are still universally masking and just really, you know, continuing to encourage people to support that and encourage their kids to do that. We're finding it's critical when it does come to the point of being asked about when we have to kind of go down through the criteria, you know, were you wearing your mask consistently and correctly, you know, within the space of, you know, the three to six foot range. And we need people to be able to be really honest about that because it makes a difference. And it might allow people to be able to stay in school, but also we're finding just with as transmissible as this is, I mean, masking is one thing. It's one piece of this puzzle. And I know Aaron and others have commented on that often, that it's one strategy, you know, so we're still, you know, trying to keep lunches outside if we can and spreading kids out as much as we can and, you know, keeping the windows open and just trying to do all those pieces. But, you know, we have a lot of people in these buildings. So we are definitely, definitely seeing some impacts here. I think we're in for a bit of a run here for a few days or maybe even weeks. I'm not sure, but.
You talked a little bit about that contact notification. Are people cooperating and who is calling people from the district?
Well, we're sharing the load right now. We don't have just one person. We're trying to work as confidentially and quickly as we can within each of the offices and the administrators. So we're all kind of taking on a lot of different roles there. We do have the ability to do some of the testing that we're doing is available in each of the offices now, and including over here in the district office. We are also helping if people are coming back from travel. You know, we do require tests upon return day zero, and then again at day seven. We are requesting people to use the PMC travel testing for that if possible, because it's, you know, it's probably a more accurate test and also just one less thing, quite frankly, that we're not trying to do here on site. We are still attempting to be a, you know, an educational center, which is really what I would just love to talk about a little bit more than all of this, but keeping our kids here and keeping these doors open is our focus right now so that we can provide the high quality education that we really want to and that people want us to provide. So that's, we're spending a lot of time on it, but we're trying to keep our heads above water. So people have been very responsive to it. You know, when we get a hold of parents and all those things, people are, you know, coming right up and, you know, getting their kids. And we're all trying to work through the process as quickly as we can. If there's siblings or, you know, other close contacts that maybe somebody has had, you know, that they might be able to identify quickly to us. I know Phil has mentioned and others on the call here that, you know, we have pretty quick access here to people, which is helpful, I think, at least in the sense of getting people maybe isolated sooner and helping close contacts be notified so that, you know, they can watch for symptoms. I think that is really important. And there have been a few cases that have come out of that recently where they have ended up being positive. So, you know, then they're home and able to find that out quickly. And, you know, if they need treatment, receive that and move it back into the medical world. So we're just trying to do our best to support those efforts so that we can keep our schools open and keep our kids here and healthy.
Question from a listener, Erica, how many total cases in the schools during this outbreak? And can you say whether that's in all three schools or not?
Well, let's see. I will look at my sheet here. So yeah, so we end up, of course, like I said, being impacted. We've had, I think about maybe six cases of associated with students and a few now with staff as well. And hopefully we won't see too many more here with connections. So, but you know, as everybody's talking about outside of my realm, this thing is pretty transmissible. So it does seem to be moving through households fairly quickly. So whether it's starting from the adult and then kind of passing through, you know, people have been really good about getting a hold of us if they do have a case. And we, of course, public health is required to notify us as well if there's any positive connection to the school or close contacts that are not supposed to be in school. So we work a lot with Aaron Michael on that or PMC. So we're hoping that we don't continue to see these on the rise. And just like I say, the testing seems to be helping here. We've caught several today. So we're just going to keep moving forward with this.
Okay. And then a question about getting information out from the school district. What's the best way, or how are you notifying people? What's the best way? I know the district has a new app out for people with phones. Is that the best way or some other way to find out more information?
Well, we're trying to keep things updated. I will probably put out another update today, actually. And we do have the one call system we used last year. We had a tech glitch kind of with that in the last couple of weeks, but it is up and running. So people may see some messages even today, just to give kind of an update on where we are. And just a reminder again about, you know, please don't send kids if they're having symptoms. And actually just what Aaron said initially about the kind of runny nose headache, that does seem to be a pretty consistent one. Like I think kids just don't necessarily think about it as much, or even parents, and, you know, they'll be here, you know, kind of coming for their regular sort of activity testing, and they'll say, oh yeah, I do have kind of a runny nose. And it's like, well, why are you here? You know, and then, you know, doing that test or maybe sending them home to get a test. And then some of those are coming back positive. So just, you know, really don't ignore those symptoms, because every person in the door just, you know, is one more opportunity to move it around in the buildings here. So.
Okay. All right. Let's go back around to the top. Sandy Dixon, if you're still on with us, what else would you like to touch on today?
Yep, I'm still on, Joe. So just to kind of piggyback on things that everyone has already talked about, the hospitals are at crisis level for capacity. And so not just with COVID cases, this affects Petersburg for medical and people with traumatic injuries as well that may need to go somewhere else for care. So if the hospitals are full or overwhelmed with COVID, that may affect being able to send out people with not COVID issues. So what we can do there are obviously take precautions and mitigation measures to avoid contracting COVID and be healthy in our lifestyles to stay medically healthy, and then reduce any risky behavior that you may be entertaining so that if you were injured, you might have to be medevaced. So we want to try to avoid impacting other hospitals as well. And then in the community, we as a community are going to need to beat COVID here. So we all need to take steps to reduce the transmission and the spread. So again, vaccinations, if you're willing and able, testing, all kinds of opportunities there. Businesses were asking you to consider masking, limit numbers of customers and gathering sizes, and then consider using curbside services so that you're not out and about if you don't have to be. And then lastly, we do want to keep the businesses, schools, and daycares open. We want our people healthy, and it's going to take the whole community to do that. So remember, when requirements are asked of you, so masking or distancing or limiting sizes, it's not a punishment. Again, it's just to keep people healthy so that we can stay open and keep our businesses running, kids in school, and kids in daycare. That's all. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Sandy. And a question that came to my mind, is there a possibility of some smaller version of an emergency operations center standing up at some point?
Well, not yet. We have a little cadre going where we have this little group of people meeting and talking about things. And so with the help of Dr. Tusillo, who's still the appointed health officer for the borough, we will be issuing some health alerts. They are not mandates. They're just alerts. So they're strong recommendations for the community. And at this point, the assembly and borough manager are not willing to stand up the EOC.
All right, let's go next to a couple of the healthcare professionals. I did have a listener question on ivermectin. A listener has heard people stocking up on this parasite medicine, and I wondered if any of the healthcare people could address this and whether this is an improved or useful treatment for COVID-19 at this point. Erin or Jennifer?
I guess I would say that people should not take any medication without the advice of their physician. So I would not recommend taking ivermectin or any other curative medicine without speaking to your medical provider. It is not an approved cure for or treatment for COVID, but I know that there are a lot of people doing it. I do have, you know, just seen like anybody else on news reports that, you know, there have been some deaths from it because people aren't taking it correctly. And so I would just warn people that even if they were going to consider that, they really need to talk to somebody about how to do it safely or if they should not do it at all. So please do not take that without, you know, advice from a medical doctor.
Okay. While you're on, Jennifer, any update on vaccine approval, emergency use authorization for lower ages, people under 12?
I mean, they are, you know, the Pfizer group feels like that they have some good studies. And I think they're, you know, hoping to present that to the FDA. All I know is what's in the news is that, you know, if everything goes according to plans, maybe kids from that 5 to 11 age group would be eligible sometime as early as Halloween, but nothing official at this point.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to address?
No, I guess I would like, other than just, you know, thanking the people who are working really hard, you know, at the schools, at public health, at the hospitals, at the borough. All the businesses and just you know, people who live in Petersburg who are doing their part to prevent this from spreading. So a big thank you to you. And then, you know, just remember all those basic things, consider vaccination and, you know, hand washing, distancing, limiting risky activities. You know, we can do this together, but it's going to take a lot of work because we're kind of in the throes of it right now. So, but, you know, be kind to your neighbors and just do what you can to be part of the solution.
Okay. Phil Hofstetter, anything else?
Yeah, I'll echo that. Kindness, obviously, every time we see increasing cases or a change, it's increased burden, it's increased pressure, it's increased stress, and kindness really, it does come around to that. So highly encourage that. Please get vaccinated. You know, just a lot of the logistics around things coming back to work or contact. There's just a lot. It's just everything's a lot easier to navigate through COVID. In addition to it being effective preventative measure for COVID is to get vaccinated. So if you have any questions, I encourage you to reach out to your medical provider to answer those. If you're feeling pressure from the family, completely understandable, but also if you can reach out to our physicians and have a consult with, they're willing to do that as well. So highly recommended. It's really our way out of this. So thank you.
Thanks. Erin Michael, public health nurse.
I don't think I have anything new to add. I think everybody has really stated it eloquently. So if anybody has any questions, feel free to give me a call at 772-4611 and I'm available.
Okay. And Erica Klutpainter, anything else?
No, just I would echo that about the kindness and patience. It's helpful, especially for those of us in the schools that are continuing to be very involved in this public health role. It's not what we went to school for. So we're just doing our best to support and follow the rules the best we can. So we appreciate that when people are patient with us and ask questions. And if we give you a wrong date or whatever, just working with us. We're doing the best we can here, trying to make those quick notifications. And then just, an echo about all those activities and actions that happen outside of school can really have a big impact on us positively and negatively here at school. So it's not just the 6 hours that we have them. We really need everybody to, kind of work through these same things we've been talking about forever here, just to minimize the impact to our in-person program. So, appreciate everything everybody is doing. We know it's a stressful time. So thanks.
Thanks to all the panelists for being on today. We might get back into doing these on a little bit more regular basis for the time being. We'll keep you posted when our next one is coming up. You're listening to KFSK in Petersburg, Street Beat Music with Alec McMurrin on tap.